Good morning, counsel. This is the case of Davis versus Moats. And we will begin by having members of the court introduce themselves, and then we will further welcome you. I'm Mike Havigan. I'm the Chief Justice, and by seniority, members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman, appearing by WebEx. Thank you.
William Castle. Good morning.
Stephanie Stacy.
Jeff Funk. Good morning.
Jonathan Papik. And John Frydenberg.
And counsel, Mr. Catlett, are you here present on WebEx?
I am.
Good morning to you. And Mr. Palmer, are you able to enter and see what is going on in the courtroom?
I can, Your Honor. And can you hear me all right?
Yes, I believe we can hear you. So, Mr. Palmer, good morning to you.
Morning.
Do either counsel have questions before we begin?
I have none.
Thank you very much. Mr. Catlett, Tim, again, good morning to you. You may proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, my name is Matt Catlett. I represent the appellant in this matter, Victoria Moats. Ms. Moats appeals from an order entered by the District Court of Madison County, denying a motion by Ms. Moats to vacate a judgment entered by that court in December of 2019, granting a petition or sustaining a petition for grandparent visitation by Laton Davis, the appellee. It is our position that the district court erred in denying the motion to vacate. Our position is that the petition was dismissed by operation of law 180 days after it was filed because Laton failed to join and serve a indispensable party under either common law, although we understand grandparent visitation did not exist at common law, but there's a statute, of course, that requires both of the parents to be served with the copy of the petition. There's nothing in the court record showing service on the father.
Counsel?
Yes.
Have we ever said that a case is dismissed by operational law if one of multiple parties have not been served?
Well, I have not been able to find a case in which the court found that, there's a statute that says the action is dismissed by operation of law as to any defendant not served. It is my position.
So the father was not served, so the case would be dismissed as against him?
Well, our position is that where the defendant is an indispensable party, the entire action is dismissed automatically at 180 days after filing.
Well, if there's a failure to include an indispensable party, isn't there a subject matter jurisdiction issue?
Certainly.
Really, the court wouldn't even entertain whether the parties have been served if one party wasn't included, they were an indispensable party in their subject matter jurisdiction. So that'd be the first thing, is the court had no authority to even entertain the case.
Right. At least not without service, not joinder of an indispensable party. Ultimately, it's the court's responsibility, the trial court's responsibility, to ensure that indispensable parties are joined. Again, grandparent visitation is a creature of statute. It didn't exist at common law. And so some of the law regarding, you know, indispensable parties, the common law doesn't really apply. I mean, we have a statute that requires that the petition be served on both parents.
So why is the father an indispensable party to this action?
Because the statute requires well, the case of, I think, the Court of Appeals, the case is...
Maybe you're referring to Beal versus Ensley, is that right?
Yeah, Beal versus Ensley. The Court of Appeals gave a, I guess what I'd call a little bit of a half-hearted statement. They said, in a petition filed pursuant to Section 43-1801, both parents should be made parties to the proceedings.
Was that in dicta?
I would say must.
Was that in dicta, or was that part of the court's finding or holding?
Well, I think it was in a discussion. Well, I guess you could say in that particular case, I think there had been a voluntary appearance by one of the parties. The court just sort of made a note in its opinion that, you know, we pause for a moment to note that, you know, although his name did not appear, he was a party to the proceeding. Well, kind of the same. That person had actually filed a voluntary appearance, which raises an interesting issue as to whether there is such a thing as a voluntary appearance of somebody who's not named or identified as a party.
Actually, indispensable party. What's your best argument that the natural father, the non-custodial parent, is an indispensable party?
Because the statute requires a copy of the petition to be served, I don't understand why the statute would require both parents to be served unless they were indispensable parties to the case. You know,
is the statute phrased in jurisdictional language? 43-1803.
Doesn't specifically say that a court lacks jurisdiction absent, you know, both parents being parties or being served. It just says they shall be served. And of course, you know, there's another statute that requires service on all, well, that requires the action to be dismissed after 180 days if any defendant is not served. There isn't any question that my client, Ms. Motes, was served within 180 days. But
so I recognize you may disagree with this, but just assume for a second that we believe the statute is not jurisdictional. Do you have an argument independent of the statute that the father was an indispensable party?
Well, it would be because his rights could, because a visitation with a grandparent would affect both parents' rights. So I understand.
Did it affect his rights in this case? He didn't have custody, right?
He didn't have custody, but I guess I would argue that whether or not he has custody, he certainly has the right to be heard, and he has, and the law regarding indispensable parties is such that, you know, the court can't enter this order without affecting, you know, his rights. Whether he has custody or not is, in my view, immaterial. The legislature created this statute. And so I guess I would default to the common law regarding indispensable parties, and that this visitation order clearly affects his rights. As I'm not his attorney, I don't have standing to make arguments on his behalf, but our contention is that this is a subject matter jurisdiction issue because the statute requires service on both parents, and because it's just impossible as a matter of law.
How does this order affect the father's rights in this case?
Well, if the father were to seek custody or visitation, I mean, his rights would be affected by this order. And without the court, you know, having adjudicated his rights to, look, I don't represent this father, so I don't, I can't speak
to the fact. I recognize that, but in order for you to make an argument that he's an indispensable party, I think you have to argue that this can't be decided without affecting his rights, and so I'm trying to identify how it affects his rights.
Subject matter jurisdiction is an issue that can be raised by any party, and a grandparent visitation order would affect the rights of both parents to the extent that they had rights to the access or custody or visitation with that child. I mean, my answer is pretty simple. The statute requires it, and we believe the court lacks subject matter jurisdiction because he was an indispensable party, and it's impossible as a matter of law to determine visitation without affecting the rights of both parents. So,
what's the purpose of notifying the father through service of this petition for grandparent rights?
Well, because grandparent visitation is, again, a creature of statute, and it needs, that is something that should be narrowly construed to reflect the constitutional right of care and companionship that exists between parent and child. And so, the legislature was very careful to note that, hey, this has got to be served on both parents. Moreover, you know, the statute doesn't even allow a grandparent visitation petition where paternity has not previously been established, unless the child was born in wedlock and there's a...
Is that the case here?
I'm sorry?
Has paternity been established here?
Well, the allegation is that Mr. Perney's paternity had been legally established. I don't think there was anything in the body of the petition that referenced a specific court order or attached a copy of a paternity decree. As I recall, it simply alleged that paternity had been legally established. I may be wrong about that. Again,
has it been?
I'm not actually aware of it. All I know is what the petition alleged, and the petition simply alleged that paternity had been legally established. The statute says that there is no such thing as grandparent visitation in the absence of paternity being established or the child being born in wedlock and a dissolution decree either entered or dissolution matter pending. So it looks like I'm nearly out of time, or am out of time. And so unless there are any further questions, I'll submit it. Thank you.
Mr. Catlett, thank you very much. Mr. Palmer, again, good morning to you. You may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice and Justices all, it's an honor to be in front of you. Taking up where we just left off, the answer of the appellant to the petition indicates that she admitted that Mr. Perney was the father of the child, and that the grandmother, Miss Davis, was the grandmother of the child in question. I think this is not a question of jurisdiction. It's not a jurisdiction case. It really is a due process case, as I've tried to point out. I think the legislature originally, when they came up with grandparent visitation legislation, wanted to make sure that both parties were aware of what was going on, and provided for that by having given them notice through the service of the petition. In this particular case, there doesn't happen to be a certification filed that there was a copy of the petition was actually served upon both parties. However, the parties have answered and submitted themselves to the jurisdiction of the court, and I think there's some confusion, I thought, on the part of counsel as to what was personal jurisdiction and what was subject matter jurisdiction. Subject matter jurisdiction can be challenged by any party at any time in the court, sui sponte. Personal jurisdiction can be done by, obviously, by voluntary appearance or service of summons to for the court to acquire jurisdiction.
Well, counsel, haven't we said that if indispensable party is not joined in the proceedings and the court does not have subject matter jurisdiction?
That's true, Your Honor.
So if in fact the natural father is an indispensable party, the issue of subject matter jurisdiction can be raised by any party at any time or by the courts to respond to. So it really isn't the question, is he a necessary party or an indispensable party? And what's the language of the statute tell us, if anything?
Well, that's the heart of the issue as to whether the court feels that there should be, have been a service of summons upon the father. In this particular case, we're saying that the statute did not require it. And it's not necessary that he be made in an illegitimate situation, that he be made a party to the action, only that he have notice, and that would suffice for due process. I think the interesting case is the Quillian case, the U.S. Supreme Court case that we have cited that deals with due process, and indicated that in that particular case where it was an adoption case, the court held that not only did he not need to be made a party, he wasn't necessary to be served with a summons, and due process was not violated by that. This is only a grandparent visitation case. It's not nearly as serious as an adoption case. And so I think that Quillian case seems to stand up in favor of the appellee here.
But Quillian is a due process constitutional case, correct?
I would say it is, yes.
So what is the argument? I think we've established that what we need to focus on is whether or not the father was an indispensable party under Nebraska law. What's your argument that he's not an indispensable party?
My argument goes to the fact that if they were married, the law indicates that, and divorced, that he would have to be made a party. That's the Beal case. That may be dicta, but I think it's maybe accepted law. I'm not sure. So I think that the Quillian case clearly indicates that you don't have to have the punitive father made in an illegitimate child situation a party, and all he needs is a notice to comply with due process. It's just not quite as serious in the eyes of the law, where it's a visitation case or an adoption case, apparently, as it would be in a custody case, for instance. I would entertain any more questions.
At the time of the original order granting visitation, was a determination made as to which one of the three categories under 43.18.02 sub 1, either A, B, or C, that the father fell, if he did fall within one of those at all? He clearly was not deceased, so A is out. B, apparently they were never married, so B doesn't apply. So we're down to C. Parents of the minor child have never been married, but paternity has been legally established. Was a determination made at the time of the grandparent visitation being ordered whether or not the requirement of C applied in this case?
Well, that's a good question. I think the only answer that I have, since the record is devoid of that, is that she admitted that he was the father. He stated under oath that he was the father, and it was alleged in the petition that he was, in fact, the father, even though it was illegitimate under the circumstances and without the benefit of marriage.
So when you're saying she stated and he stated, you're talking about at the hearing that was held when the grandparent visitation was initially ordered?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
If you don't have any further questions, I won't burden you.
Do we have any further questions for Mr. Palmer?
Thank you.
Mr. Palmer, thank you very much. I don't believe we have any time for a rebuttal. Is that correct? There is no time for rebuttal. So that concludes arguments in Davis versus Moats. Counsel, thank you very much for participating by WebEx, and we wish you a further good day. And with that, the court, this case is completed, and the court is adjourned for the day. Thank you all very much.